I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about ways we can serve and help orphans. Saving Orphans Through Healthcare and Outreach, SOHO, has several events scheduled this month. My guests are Cynthia Prime, Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of SOHO, acclaimed singer-songwriter Beth Nielsen Chapman, and Dr. Dawn Batson, who is piloting an intervention program with Steel Drums in Indy. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about saving orphans through healthcare and outreach, otherwise known as SOHO. It's an organization with an innovative approach. We're going to talk about it and some of the events that are coming up that are associated with SOHO this month. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Cynthia Prime. She is the CEO and co-founder of Saving Orphans Through Healthcare and Outreach. We are also blessed by the presence of internationally acclaimed singer-songwriter Beth Nielsen Chapman and Dr. Dawn Batson, who is piloting an intervention program with Steel Drums in Indianapolis. Well, welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
It's good to have you here. So we probably ought to talk with people about what SOHO is, and I think, Cynthia, that one's probably best directed to you. So talk to me a little bit about what SOHO does and how it got started.
Certainly. SOHO got started when I had a speaking engagement in Swaziland, a place I knew nothing about, 11 years ago. And I think my defining moment was meeting thousands of children without parenting, without homes, and feeling the need to begin making a difference there. And how this all ties in is that in the process of addressing things such as gender-based abuse, abuse of girls, transactional sex for children who need food and so they give it up for that, I began having events in Indianapolis because we have a base in Indianapolis. We have our offices here in Indianapolis, and we also have a board of directors in Swaziland. We have an NGO in Swaziland. But in the process of addressing the issue of a population where one in three girls is violated, I thought to raise awareness in Indianapolis. But in working with those who work with challenged populations here in Indianapolis, I learned that we do have issues right here in our city where children experience abuse and where in some cases, redress isn't there for different reasons. Began having a series of events, usually in the month of October, and one of the key events was finding leaders in the world who are making a difference in people's lives, and we honor them. And we have other events that we'll talk about. But our honorees this year were Naomi Tutu, the daughter of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and, as you pointed out, world-renowned singer-songwriter Beth Nielsen Chapman. This brings people together so they learn more about the issues and more about SOHO, and it also raises funds for our intervention programs.
So, and in terms of the mission, what sorts of things do you provide? What sorts of services do you provide?
Well, it's heal, educate, feed, a parenting, and nurture. It's a holistic program. We have to work with the populations, whether it's the elderly grannies or the children, at their point of need. Is feeding, is educating, is life skills, is all of those things. And we recruit We work with an international network of partners, including different schools at IUPUI, schools and universities in different parts of the country, where they bring their students and graduate students and what have you to not only to learn, but to give back, to give something of their skills to those children. So it is really not only trying to help keep them alive and schooled and what have you, is looking at impacting their lives so that they can change the trajectory of their lives for the future.
Why did you choose the two honorees, one of whom we have here with us? What were the reasons?
Well, we looked at two things. One, we looked at, you know, we called it pathfindering, people who are taking innovative approaches to touching the lives of others. The other guest, Naomi Tutu, her advocacy, her passion for justice and reconciliation and healing and all of those things. With Beth, we were very touched by the fact that throughout her life, from what I could see, music has not been just a form of entertainment, as wonderful as it is. Her music has impacted the lives of many people who are hurting, because you would learn from her own personal life experience. Music is a tool not only to bring people together, to bring healing, but also to look at the social impact of what we can do through that particular medium.
Beth, I think that's your cue to talk about what music means.
Yes,
to,
well,
you and to others. Then
it is a healing. It's the healing go-to tool in my toolbox, and it has been since I was about 11. Through the big parts of my life that have pulled me inside out, like losing my husband to cancer in 1994, going through breast cancer myself in the year 2000, going through a brain tumor, and also just looking around and, you know, people in my life and all of us, you know, as we deal with these things. I've been fascinated by the way that my process of being a songwriter has helped me to work through my own personal experience and to find a way to express that. And when I was writing songs to get myself through the loss of my husband, I wasn't thinking I'm going to help a lot of people by writing these songs. I was doing it for totally selfish reasons.
Therapeutic reasons.
Self-healing and just trying to figure it all out. And what the result was then becomes a body of work that has gone out into the world. And I've moved on to different songs, and, you know, those songs move into the world and find people in the most amazing ways. I've gotten letters from people saying, my friend gave me this album, and, you know, and so there's this beautiful, natural sort of way that it grows and does what it needs to do in the world. It's none of my business. It's not something I have to make happen. Mm-hmm. And that has been one of the most wonderful aspects of being a songwriter. I mean, I've made my living as a songwriter, writing for other artists and, you know, even the fun songs like This Kiss, which was a hit for Faith Hill, you know. That's just been very enriching to write those kinds of songs. And I've been thoroughly enjoying, you know, the artist making them hits and, you know, being able to make a living is a wonderful thing. But on a much deeper level, besides the kind of songs that do that, the songs that I've written to get myself through things in life have been really on a whole deeper level, a different kind of hit altogether. And, you know, when I went to South Africa, I went to Swaziland as well with my friend Gail Masando and her husband Vic, who are wonderful people, very involved in helping people and living a life of service to others that are in need. My life was changed by that. And I've, you know, through the years, kept in touch with people that I met and helped to support the organizations that are trying to help support the young children that don't have anything. You know, sometimes their parents have died through HIV. And again, as Cynthia said, in my own community, I start to recognize it's right here. I don't even have to go halfway across the world. It's everywhere. And I think when you're impacted by it so strongly, it's hard to ever, can't put the lid back on it. You know, it's just, you start to see it. You start to feel like it's part of my mission in life is to be actively involved in trying to be part of a solution.
And indulge me for a moment here, because I think everyone responds to what you're saying here, the idea that music provides some sort of release. I mean, we've all, you know, when you're driving the car and a music that, a song that means something to you comes on, it can take you back to a place or to a feeling that you had, all of that sort. When you talk about the ones that were self-healing, could you give us an example and walk us through the process, and in what ways did it heal you?
Well, I can give you a particular song that comes to mind is a song that I wrote called Every December Sky. And I wrote it 2 years before I recorded it. Mm-hmm. And I recorded it, and when just about the time I finished making that record called Deeper Still, that was the name of the album, the last day of mixing, I found out I had breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And almost every song on that album sounds like I wrote it after I went through breast cancer. It was like there's so many songs about feeling, you know, coming to a place in my center and working through and surviving. And, you know, there's like, I remember thinking, wow, these songs are interesting. They have a sort of a theme, but I wasn't aware that my life was going to step into this next year and a half. Instead of putting the record out, I ended up going through treatment for a year and a half. And I sat on my couch singing that song, Every December Sky, which basically is all about loss. And I thought I was writing it for something else. And the first verse says, every December sky must lose its faith in leaves and dream of the spring inside the trees. And it's about going through the coldest, hardest winter and trying to have some semblance of faith that there's going to be spring. It's going to get better. I just have to remember that. I'm having to tell myself a lot that, you know, during times of struggle. But while I was sitting on the couch, the hair was coming off my head at the same time that the leaves were coming off the trees. And in the spring, the leaves came back on the trees and my hair grew back in. So I was sort of lived that song, but I wrote it 2 years before that. So I have this feeling.
So it was a question whether life was reflecting art or art was reflecting life.
Well, I think art, I think there's a great wisdom in creativity itself as this sort of collaborator that's here with us, that, you know, the collaboration of ourselves and creativity. And I think of creativity as oxygen. I think of it as something that's just waiting for us to breathe it in. And some of us breathe deeper than others because sometimes our parents weren't encouraging or life has been different for other people. And I mean, one of the things that I'm very involved in is working with people and giving them the sense that they have their own birthright to be creative. Like a lot of people think, well, I'm just not creative. I can't do that, you know. And everybody, if you're breathing, you have the same empowerment. It's just, you're like, I don't have more oxygen than you have. And a person that's sitting next to me that might run marathons has the same amount of oxygen in this room, but they'd be using it much more efficiently than I would because their lungs are really conditioned. So it's about conditioning yourself to see yourself as a creative person.
Dawn, I'm assuming that quality of creativity providing therapeutic or healing aspects is part of the motivation between what you're trying to do with Steel Drums and young people.
Indeed. The instrument itself was born out of struggle created by young people, mainly young men of African descent. And at the time, no one around them believed that it was of any worth. It was only when they went out into the world and showed the world what was there that the Trinidadian population, where it was created, began to accept it. And it's very, very strange, but the instrument, I've worked with people all over the world with the instrument, and there is a spiritual element to it, a healing element to it.
What accounts for that, would you say?
You know, I don't know. Some people say it's the tempering of the steel, the fact that the steel has to be changed that creates that empathy, because it too has gone through a process of fire, as many of us have.
So in working with these young people, what do you encourage them to do? What are you trying to get them to do?
It goes back to Beth's point of creativity and believing that you can be all that you can be, you know, and respecting each other and respecting the process.
So what do you ask that? What specifically do these young people do with the steel drums? They play them? I mean, is it without training? Or do you do lessons or anything like that?
Yes. We try and create music on the instrument, their music.
So and their music, so they're beating out their own rhythms. And how does that go?
Well, What you do is you start with finding out who they are as people and really, really coming together and bringing out that music in them.
We are talking about saving orphans through healthcare and outreach, otherwise known as SOHO, today on No Limits. They've got some big events coming up, including one this evening that we've got to talk to when we come back. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Cynthia Prime. She is the CEO and co-founder of SOHO. We also have with us internationally acclaimed singer-songwriter Beth Nielsen Chapman, who's going to be performing and is being honored for her work, and Dr. Dawn Batson, who's piloting an intervention program with Steel Drums here in Indianapolis. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about saving orphans through healthcare and outreach, otherwise known as SOHO. It's an organization based here that takes innovative approaches in attempting to aid the lives of young people. My guests are Cynthia Prime. She is the CEO and co-founder of SOHO. Internationally acclaimed singer-songwriter Beth Nielsen Chapman, who is being honored by SOHO and will be performing, and Dr. Dawn Batson, who's piloting an intervention program that involves steel drums based here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what our regular listener Jerry has done, and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, has saving orphans through healthcare and outreach established objective, measurable criteria for its success? Cynthia, I think that one goes to you.
Well, over the years, our focus was not on using music for intervention. Over the years, what we have done is initially to take teams there to do clinics, to do, you know, make sure that some of the felt needs were met. And then looking at sustainability, we've mm-hmm. developed three schools. There are preschools, but we also do tutoring. We do life skills. We do we've done camps just recently with the children because they don't get that kind of nurture. So in terms of measurable results, I think what we look at right now is the children who probably would have fallen off already, who are still there, who are in school, the children who probably would have been trafficked for lack of food, making sure that they are fed and that their needs are taken care of. But we're looking towards the future and realize that just providing food and shelter, trying to raise funds for school fees, keeping children in school, is not enough. We had a situation where a teenage girl, we worked with her all the way to getting through college, which is amazing when mm-hmm. children, most of them have such a struggle getting through basic school, let alone high school graduation is a huge deal. Few get to go to college because there's tuition for high school and they drop out. Well, this girl goes all the way after quite a difficult journey, and then a couple of weeks later ends up raped and pregnant and suicidal, all of those things. So dealing with those issues made us realize that we have to become creative and innovative in programming when very much in a society we're not able overtly to address some of the social issues. And that is where these new programs, incidentally, the Strong as Steel program is just beginning, and Dr. Batson is mm-hmm. about to pilot that program. It has a curriculum that goes that's in development.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't measure yet because we're in the formative stage, but we do know that the tools are there. And from what we've seen in other countries, we know that it could be an amazing success both here and in Swaziland. Mm.
So we've got, though, a big event this evening, right?
Yes.
Probably should talk about that. Beth is somehow involved in this.
I'm going to be
rocking
it.
Cynthia, what's going on this evening?
Well, we have a concert for social change. That's what we call it. It's the second such event that we've sponsored this year. The first was in the synagogue, Bethel Zedek mm-hmm. Synagogue, with a different group there. But this evening's concert is going to feature Beth and her music and the mastery and her conversation with the audience. And we're inviting everyone to come out. It's at Broad Ripple High School Auditorium. It's a free concert. Mm-hmm. We also have some of the young talent here, some of the violinists and string instrument players and what have you from Broad Ripple High School, from Heron. We have artists from Jacob School of Music. Mm-hmm. So you have that mix. Mm-hmm. And then you have Beth really. You know, it opens the door for people to come and be able to share in this experience. And in the process, we're also saying this is an entertaining evening, but there are some social issues we're trying to address here. And any revenues that come from people making contributions that are tax deductible will go towards the steel pan instruments for the Strong as Steel program okay. right here in Indianapolis.
So the concert, in some ways, if there are revenues from it, will support what Dawn is trying to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, in some ways, yes, we say it's a fun event, but then it's billed as a concert for social change. How does that change how you approach the performance, or does it?
To me, it doesn't change my performance, because if you come to one of my performances, if I'm out on tour, I'm going to be telling stories and talking about things in between songs that are maybe I wouldn't call it social change, although it all fits in with just human being stuff. You know,
yeah.
I love to talk about human being stuff from things in my life to here's how this song came about, or, you know, a funny story about Willie Nelson, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, mine is like a big patchwork quilt, and I'm super excited because I'm a massive fan of steel drums. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to hear this sound, because the sound of a steel drum is like a deeper thing than, mm-hmm. it's like a Tibetan bowl in all sorts of different notes or something. It's a very deeply healing instrument, and a kid who doesn't have very much of a sense of their self-worth, given an opportunity to just make that sound, and then you add in some specifics about how to tell them how to make a sound and organize that, and then you add onto that a curriculum that helps them get a sense of how to get their balance in their life. It is like a triple-decker win-win-win, and I'm just super excited to be here to support that and get to sing in the process.
So what are you going to play tonight?
Oh, I'm going to play a couple of songs that have never been heard before. They're brand new.
Okay.
Which is always really scary in the coolest way. I'm going to play big old hits that helped put my son through college that you might have heard before. And some of them are very funny. And, you know, I'll hopefully make you laugh and cry and make you feel compelled to support this organization.
Okay.
And I'm just thrilled to be here and doing that.
And your son's a musician as well.
My right? son is a wonderful musician.
Yeah. Does he tour with you at all?
He has toured with me. He's done everything. He's been my okay. bass player, my drummer, my musical director. And now he's doing all sorts of interesting marketing stuff. He says, Mom, it's just like songwriting. So he's having a great time. He's also a great music teacher. He teaches a lot.
So, Dawn, we're coming back now to your project here. Part of, I guess, and I wasn't doing it as adroitly as I might have, is leading you toward what I thought might be the therapeutic. I've often thought, I don't play the drums or any musical instrument myself, but I've often thought if I had deep sources of pain or, you know, some aggression I wanted to channel or something like that, the drums would be a wonderful way to do that. That you can work out an awful lot of stuff mm-hmm. just pounding away there. That's where I was trying to go at some level with this, is What release does it give for these young people who you know, probably may or may not have any musical training when they approach playing the steel drum?
Let me give you two examples. Many years ago in the Virgin Islands, U.S. Mm. Virgin Islands, one of the judges in the juvenile court, he found that there were too many cases coming before him. So he decided to start a steel band. And whenever a youngster came in front of him, his punishment or her punishment was to go and join the steel band. The steel band became so big and so popular that they had to allow others to join. Then too, in Australia, parts of the country were devastated by fire. Mm-hmm. One of the members of the community created a steel band. They would come together in evenings after the fire and rebuilding and sit, play, and talk. And I think that's the beauty of the instrument, in that it is an instrument that you can go right away and you can create a note. Mm-hmm. You can create a sound that sounds like something, you know? Initially, it's easy to learn. Later on, of course, it's more difficult. But one of the things, you said pound, you never beat the pan. In Trinidad, we call it a steel pan and not a steel drum. Because when people hear the word drum, you think, you know, you're actually, you know, beating
it. Bam, bam, bam.
But you don't beat it. You play it. And the sound, the transference of the sound is a beautiful thing. And because you are creating it without too much difficulty, it allows you to release.
Mm-hmm. So how do you, when you are working with a young person, how do you get them to approach the instrument, as it were?
The first thing I do is tell them the history of the instrument, because I want them to understand that it was created by young people like themselves who didn't have any musical training, no training at all. In fact, that's why the instruments, the highest pan is called the tenor. Mm. The one of the pans is called the double guitar. And one teacher said, "You're going to teach how to play a double guitar in a week, a guitar in a week?" I said, "No, it's one of the instruments of the orchestra," because the young people who created it were not musically literate, they were creatively literate. And whatever names were around, they brought those names into the orchestra, the steel orchestra. And so I explained to them that these young people created it because they were being told no at every turn. Mm-hmm. And they never gave up. They took it, and from little tins and then to the oil drums, they created the instrument. So I explained that to them. And then I tell them that when you approach it with respect. Just as you would approach anyone in the world, you approach the instrument with respect. And first of all, you play it gently, mm-hmm. a gentle sound. You know, years ago, one of my past students, he is a speaker now, and somebody came and told me that he speaks about you. I said, "He speaks about mm-hmm. me?" He says, "Yes, we're in class." And he gives a story that he was playing the recorder. He's one of those children mm-hmm. who is, you know, really, really active. And he was blowing it hard. If you've ever heard of a recorder blowing hard, you know you don't hear it. But he was blowing it hard, and I said, "Stop, blow it." He blew it hard. I said, "Stop, blow it again." He blew it hard. About the 15th time, he blew it gently, and a beautiful sound came out. And I said to him, "See, sometimes you don't have to make a loud sound to create something beautiful." And he said he took that with him, and now he speaks to people all over the world. So sometimes it's something very, very simple that you can share.
We are talking today on No Limits about saving orphans through healthcare and outreach, otherwise known as SOHO. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So, Dawn, I'm going to stay with you for just a second. What, you know, with this, since you are piloting this, trying this approach, what do you hope the young people will get out of it? What are the outcomes that you want to see?
I hope that they will realize that we are not all so different. Mm-hmm. In this world where we fight against each other because we belong to a different political party, we belong to a different race, this is an equalizer. And I want them to learn that they can be empowered. And it doesn't matter what you look like, it doesn't matter what you have, it doesn't matter what you think you believe, because your beliefs change over time, but that you can create something wonderful and give them that strength to go outside and do it in other areas of life. Because music, to me, is part of everything that we do.
Beth, is that part of what drew you to music in the first place? I mean, there is that theory, probably one that can be supported.
Yeah, I mean, it's older than dirt, as they say. I think that it's a very human thing to make a sound, and to make a sound literally. I mean, I blur the line between speaking and singing. Mm-hmm. I teach singing workshops where I try to get people who tend to have learned how to sing, but maybe they oversing. And I'm like, it's sort of like beating the drum too loud. And I back them back up into just using their speaking voice. And I say, really? And they'll say, well, I can't write a melody. And I said, really? No, I can't write a melody. I went, da, 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 da. Let's pick that out on the piano. No, I can't write a melody. You actually just wrote a melody. And so when you say something, whatever melody you put into it changes the meaning. And it's really about redefining the skills and the thing you already have within you. And people go, wow, I could actually do this. And that feeling, I'm sure you have that when you see a young person get that tone just right. There's that sweet spot. Mm-hmm. And each of us know, you know, when we're in our center, we automatically come from that sweet spot of our soul. Really, it's our heart and soul. It is the birthright of every human being. And so many people don't know they have permission to be the brilliant soul that they are. They just don't know. They haven't had that encouraged. And it's one of the most exciting things to me about being in the world as a musician, to pull that out of other people, or just to let them uncover that in themselves and see that for the first time.
Is it a unifying force, though? I mean, is it something
Absolutely.
That reaches across?
Absolutely. It is. You know, I've been in front of a lot of different audiences through my career, and music is the universal language. It is the absolute universal language. And I did an album called Prism where I went all over the world and sang in 9 different languages. And I don't speak those languages, but I learned it phonetically, and it was really powerful. And it's powerful to be in those different cultures and see how we're all just folks, you know, we're all worrying about our children and trying to live our lives and impacted by the same basic 7 emotions. So there's this taproot that we have that leads down to the groundwater and connects us all.
Well, one of the things, though, that I'm picking up from our conversation is this sense of separation that has to be bridged. As we were talking about music, I'm thinking of an essay the late rock critic Lester Bangs wrote, I think when Elvis died years ago, where he said, you know, fragmentation of the music industry was taking off at that point, and you can see it with media, with all sorts of things here. He said, I'm not going to say goodbye to him, meaning Elvis. I'm going to say goodbye to you, because we're not finding things that we agree on as much anymore. In some ways, what we're trying to do here is cross-pollinate
Absolutely.
Through musical genres and reverse that trend. Cynthia, is there something about music that makes it easier to approach young people and bring them to appreciate perhaps different cultures and different challenges than they had?
Yes, because music is, as you just pointed out, a language to them. Mm-hmm. But I think the other part of it is they know that they have hurts in different ways that they don't articulate or they don't communicate to others. And if they are able to see a symbolism in an instrument, for example, the drum is a container for rubbish or trash, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out of empty drums, out of the old steel, out of the old oil fields. But that is pulled out of that environment and is cleaned and is chromed and it's fired and it's hammered and it's tuned, as Dr. Batsner's Dawn will tell you. And out of that comes an instrument that is played in palaces, that is played around the world by 1 or 2 or 2,000. And you don't have to be able to read music to do it. It's symbolic of the fact that life, it can make you bitter or better. The adversities, the hammering, the tuning can make you make sweet music with your life, or it can take you right back to the rubbish pile.
We are talking about Saving Orphans Through Healthcare and Outreach. They have several events coming up, including one this evening. My guests are Cynthia Prime. She's CEO and co-founder of SoHo. Singer-songwriter Beth Nielsen-Chapman, who's going to be performing and is being honored. And Dr. Dawn Batson, who's piloting an intervention program that uses steel drums. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about an organization called Saving Orphans Through Healthcare and Outreach, otherwise known as SOHO, and the innovative ways it tries to affect and improve the lives of young people. My guests are Cynthia Prime. She is CEO and co-founder of SOHO. Internationally acclaimed singer-songwriter Beth Nielsen-Chapman, who's being honored and will be performing this evening at Broad Ripple High School, and Dr. Dawn Batson, who's piloting an intervention program that uses steel drums. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So right before we went to the break, we were talking about the ways that music can touch people, and that it is in some ways that language that goes beyond barriers, language barriers or culture. I want to say, I mean, Beth, since you have, made your career with this, I mean, when you are writing a song, do you think about what the impact is going to be on the listener, or does
Never.
That become, okay, okay.
Which sounds funny to say, because I've gotten such wonderful feedback from people saying, you just wrote my life, or you wrote the song for me, and I'm always thrilled when they feel that way. But I have literally just been trying to plumb my own, using my divining rod of my heart and my soul in the caves of my own inner sanctum, and trying to stay true to what I'm feeling, really, and put it into words. That's just been kind of... But what's fascinating, though, is a lot of times I start with a sound, and I'll play a chord. I'll just start making a sound, and I'll record it, because I get sort of into an altered state, and I'm going, ah, and the vowels will often start to get into place. And then 2 weeks later, when I'm finished with the lyric, if I went back to that first little snippet that I started, the vowels are already there. It's like the song's already written, and I'm just sort of downloading it in layers. And I really believe in this dance between us and this collaboration with creative flow. And have you ever noticed how ideas kind of come of their time? Like, you can have... This happens all the time in Nashville, where I live. Music Row is full of songwriters, right? Over and over again, there'll be a song written, and it'll be a slightly different title, same idea for the song, on two different streets by two different writers that don't even know each other. So I think there's kind of a collective wisdom that arrives at a place where it's like just right timing for that idea to come through. And it's pretty fascinating. It's like a magical thing to me.
Well, you said that ever since you were 11 years old, music has been basically the way you cope with the world and
it
cope
is,
with
yeah,
engage
yeah.
and engage with it. What was it about music? I mean, for some people, even people of artistic temperament, say, well, I did that through writing, or I did that through acting, or dance spoke to me, or
I don't know what sparked it. I mean, I just know that when I realized I was a musician, I was at my friend's house, and we were jumping on the bed, and her parents had the radio on, and I heard Penny Lane. And it was like, Penny Lane, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I went, oh, I have to be doing this, It was so powerful. It had me just jumping up and down, and it's so much joy in that song, and so much deep richness of life in music across the board. It's true for painting and art and other genres. It's just, this is where I went, okay, this is what I'm doing. And it's just super powerful. I mean, I've done a lot of keynotes and walking in and I'm going to talk and I'm going to lecture, and I always start with a song. And there's a physical DNA shift in a group of people when you sing a song or you play a piece of music. It doesn't have to be me singing it. Any piece of music shifts the cells in the room. It's a powerful, powerful entity in our lives, and I don't think we even realize how powerful it is.
A lot of your songs have been hits for other people. You know, many of the biggest ones in that situation. And I think this was said about Frank Sinatra by one of the folks who did a lot of writing for him. And a songwriter is eluding my memory at the moment. But he said about Sinatra, one of the reasons that they loved having Sinatra record his songs was that Sinatra was the only singer who taught him something new about the song itself.
Oh, that's a great point, yeah. I mean, there is absolutely, when I would hear, I've had a couple of songs recorded by Willie Nelson, and mm-hmm. I mean, I was coming of age as a songwriter. I had every Willie Nelson album. We listened to those through the barbecue. They were so worn out, you could hold them up to the light and see through them. This is back in the days of vinyl.
I was
time to get a new copy of this one.
Yeah.
To hear him sing my song was like an otherworldly experience. To hear his voice and his phrasing and how he made it his own. The same thing happened with Elton John. I mean, that was an amazing mm-hmm. moment when he sang the song that I wrote called Sand and Water that I put out mm-hmm. after my husband's death. And he called me on the phone, and I thought somebody was playing a trick on me. He called me on the phone. He said, "Do you mind if I sing this song in place of Candle in the Wind on my tour?" And I'm like, "Who is this really?" And it was incredible. And he went and performed it every night as a tribute to Diana. And I just wrote that to get myself through the loss of my husband. I never imagined it would be something that Elton John would sing. And his performance of it was like listening to it. Actually went the first time I heard it was in a huge arena, and I just went, man, that's really a good song. Oh wait, I wrote that.
Yeah.
I literally heard it for the first time.
What did it reveal to you though? That I mean, it is there ever that quality of, oh, that's what I must have meant?
Well, I knew what it meant, but you know, there are elements in that song I didn't plan for, but I realized and appreciated after the fact. So mm-hmm. the song taught me. I didn't teach anything. I didn't learn anything. I learned from the song instead of the other way around. And it has a cadence. It's like, all alone, I didn't like the feeling. All alone, da-da-da, all alone. It does it three times. And
so it's
the
like
same
a wave
word.
And a receding.
And it's kind of like a little, maybe I didn't hit your heart that time, but how about this time? Well, maybe the third time. And people who haven't been able to feel grief that's so locked in them, they're so tight against the feeling, I don't want to feel as bad as I must feel because I went through this loss. So they just encase it in mm-hmm. busyness or other things or drugs or alcohol or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've had so many letters from people saying, you know, when I put that song on, it just cracks me open and I can mm-hmm. cry. Any other time I can't access those depths of my grief. To feel like I was part of putting that in the world is such an incredible feeling. I don't feel like I wrote it. I feel like I wrote it down, but I don't mm-hmm. feel like I wrote it with mm-hmm. with a lot of help from this collaborative spirit, that's creative spirit, which I think of it as a very deeply spiritual. It's like God, you know, breathing through us when we are cracked open by life. We are, there's breath that comes through us. It makes us even more creative. And I think that's an amazing tool for all of us to not miss while we're here on our time on Earth.
Dawn and Cynthia, I sort of led the conversation here for a reason, because it's been my perception, and I've dealt through the years with a fair number of truly traumatized young people. And one of the things I've noticed that can be the biggest barrier is that the desperation with which they cling to their pain at times, that it's become companion. Often they think of it as defining them. And for the healing process to begin, somehow they must be persuaded to let go of that pain, to surrender it. Is that sort of what, and that has to be done often indirectly, is that part of what approaching this through music and approaching it by trying to release the creativity comes from? I'll start with Dawn, but I want to hear Cynthia's thoughts as well.
Yes, because very often with our young people, they're talked at a lot, you know, all the time. You should do this, you should do that. But with the music, they are in charge. They're in control. And it takes time. It takes time with anything else. But sometimes you can see the spark. You can see the spark. You know when that note has touched them. And it's a joy. And I think those are two things that we try to make sure that they have, the joy and the respect. Because if you look at the steel drum, if the steel pan, the steel band, it's a kinetic instrument. You dance as you play. And for some reason, as you dance, you're releasing those emotions, and it will take time. It does take time, but nobody's hitting you over the head and say you have to get it by tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's a process.
Cynthia?
Well, I think my understanding and my awakening of the power of music came when in Swaziland I'd collect whatever I could, and at one point I stood before a mass of children. You could have 100-200 children, or you can have 20-30 of them. Well, I stood before a group of children that they admitted the children had nothing to eat. And what they do, you stand and they look so forlorn, and they look so literally hungry inside and out, and then one would begin to sing. It will break your heart. They sing when they're hungry. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the song, their eyes are dancing. Their lips are smiling, even though their stomachs are empty. And I think I learned there the power of music. They sing when they're hungry, and they sing to celebrate my needs have been met. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a little bit of the same here. They're more sophisticated, the young people here. But when they understand how for example, the pan, how it comes about. And, you know, whatever you're going through is going to allow you to be better by choice. You see what I'm saying? Then they take the instrument with a different attitude. The other thing is that you're supposed to be a dummy if you can't read musical notes. Mm-hmm. You come to the pan with who you are. Mm. You come to the steel drums with who you are. And by the end of the day, you may still not, when I say the day, not literal day, but you may still not be able to read the music of Handel or this one or that one. But you can play anything given time. You can play classical, folk, a calypso. You can play anything as long as your air is in tuned. Mm-hmm. And so it's all symbolic of your life's journey. When they get that, they can encourage and empower other young people, not only with the music of the drums, but by being able to articulate their own experience with it.
Which gets me to the point I ultimately wanted to get to, and this has become a kind of a conversation about how life and art intersect, and I've got to admit, I don't expect any of us really to have the answer to this question, but I'm going to pose it anyway, which is, why is it so much easier for human beings to, for example, sing, "I'm hurting," than it is simply to say, "I'm hurting"? We'll start with Cynthia on that one.
Because singing takes you a bit out of yourself. It takes you out of yourself. When you have to communicate, you're spilling your guts. Mm-hmm. When you're singing, you're liberating something inside of yourself, and you may speak your pain, but it allows a third person or a second person to come in there. And you don't feel so raw, and you don't feel so exposed. It makes it easier. You're communicating, but it's not only with your internal self. You're communicating with all who would listen as well.
Dawn.
I think when Cynthia spoke about exposing, that is the essence. Because when you sing, are you really speaking from your heart? Mm-hmm. Or are you speaking from someone else's heart? It allows you to have a sort of a cover, you know, that you can put that coat on. And I'm singing about joy. Maybe inside I'm sad. But afterwards, it becomes a conversation with yourself. You sing about joy, and the joy comes. It's like smiling. Mm-hmm. You smile, and then after a while, maybe I'm kind of happy, even mm-hmm. though I'm sad.
Beth. To me, making a sound of singing is creating a much deeper resonance. It's a vibration. If I, you know, hold up a tuning fork that I've activated and I put it near a wine glass, the wine glass is going to start to sing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like human beings have a kind of resonance with each other, even if it's like sort of subliminal. When those children, one of them might just be in too much pain, and by the time four or five of them around them are singing, they start to feel the vibration. It's like it's uplifting in such an incredibly powerful way that I feel like it's comforting to me. And I believe fully that it's all there for everyone. And what a beautiful story about those children mm-hmm. singing. It makes you want to make sure that we get them some food, too. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah. That's why everybody needs to come out tonight
right.
and hear you, Beth.
See, my charge is not zero, but please think yeah. about this yes. wonderful organization.
Yes.
Was it easier for you, I mean, using this, was it easier for you to sing and write about your husband's death or mm-hmm. your struggles with cancer or struggle with a brain tumor mm-hmm. than it was just
much
to talk about it?
It was not only much easier, it was the only way that I was able to do it. I literally did not cry very often. I just was busy. I was a single mom. I wanted to just keep one foot in front of the other. I didn't want to go sit around and think about how I thought my loss was so big. I was like, I think it's too big. I can't do it. It's like somebody saying, hey, swallow that boulder, you know. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the song Sand and Water is about how a boulder is really just sand and water after a million years of
collecting.
So it's transformation that allows us to sort of slowly work through those emotions. And that's what music is. It's transformation. All of us is transformation of that grief.
Well, we're getting close on time here. So, Cynthia, we probably ought to tell people again about the event tonight. The show is at Broad Ripple High School, right?
Yes, Broad Ripple High School. Auditorium. They've got a 1,000-seat auditorium there. We'd like everyone to come, as Beth has given herself. It's a free concert. We would be asking for a contribution for the drums so that the children can have those instruments. We would be also featuring young talent from Indianapolis, Jacobs School of Music. It's going to be a wonderful, engaging experience, and you really don't want to miss it.
And the show starts at what time?
The show, doors open at 6, please.
Okay, and the show starts at?
The show starts at 6:15, 6, yeah, 6:15.
6:15 or so. And how long, approximately, do you think it's going to last?
I think...
For people who have parents and it's a school night.
Okay.
Or people who have children.
I think by around 8 o'clock or so, shortly after we'd be finished.
Well, I'd like to thank my guest, Cynthia Prime, of Saving Orphans Through Healthcare and Outreach, singer-songwriter Beth Nielsen-Chapman, and Dr. Dawn Batson for what's been an intriguing conversation, pleasant one. I've enjoyed talking with all of you. I'd like to invite our listeners to come back next Tuesday when we're going to talk about the role guns play in Indianapolis, Indiana, and America. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.